Welcome, everyone. We are starting The Future of Finance, a webcast by Future Proofing Next called Future Proofing Now. And today we'll talk about a glimpse at the next 5 years of banking, investing, and insurance. I'd like to welcome my co-host and co-moderator today, Sean Moffitt, and Joanne Lemkuhl, who is our community manager. And today we'll also be joined by a panel, Jessica Ross from Salesforce, Thomas Crowe Jensen from Copenhagen FinTech, Amy Dawson from Visa, and Mario Hernandez from Open Finance 2020 and EOS. Today is the conversation is around the future of finance, really timely, but I also wanted to share some ideas from some of the webcasts that we've had before. So Sean, would you like to talk about cross-industry movers?
I just drew a reference to the fact that it was our last episode. It was one of our better ones, which today will succeed it, I guess, by a certain increment. But certainly we had a good panel for as well there. And I think similar to the spirit, I think our panelists are bringing to today, there's a let's get to the business aspect of it. But I think we all recognize that we're in the middle of this crazy pandemic situation that we're in, and we'll at least reference that and give some empathy for the people that are out there going through either the front lines or just being impacted by that as well.
Right. And we also wanted to announce that we've started a new initiative. We were just joking about the fact that we read the book so you don't have to. So we've been reading books and thinking about really important topics. Started something called In the Author's Studio. Hat tip to James Lipton, who did In the Actor's Studio. And it's an informal conversation with people who have written important books. And the first one we did was with Tendai Vicky, Pirates in the Navy. The next one was with Tony Saldana, who talked about why digital transformation fails. And then we've also posted the conversation with Robbie Kelman Baxter on the Forever Transaction. And hoping that you'll suggest some other authors that we can talk to about important topics that are important to the future-proofing community. Sean?
And I just want to, this is kind of our quickies before we get into our own webcast today. We hosted something about 3 or 4 weeks ago where we got about 40 to 50 different thought leaders together, and we're doing the same thing this Friday. I think there's a general sentiment that when is this COVID thing over? And so we're just getting a group of smart people together, could be you. The theme is what follows COVID. So we're asking people to think deeply about what will we look like on the other side of this?
And one of the things we like to do in the upfront before we bring the panelists on is talk about trends. And once again, we don't believe that you have to be able to predict trends with perfection, but we do believe that everyone needs to have sensors in the market to be able to feel what's happening and some of the long tail things that are going on in different industries, knowing, of course, that it's going to most likely be cross-industry innovation that comes to change us and force us to transform. Sean, talk to us about today's topic. Finance, banking, and insurance came in as number two, and it's moving in the ranks. How?
Well, and really it's a solve with number one, healthcare. Today, we should have actually made it into number one, although just to be consistent with last week, we've done two different surveys on customer and technology, and it was number one and number two in terms of disrupted industries. Probably less so from a pandemic standpoint, although obviously majorly affected. There was just travel and tourism. It's tough to be more impacted than that industry. So, it's a $25 trillion industry. We've got people that cover off most parts of it today. And I'm looking forward to understanding people's kind of inclinations on it.
Perfect. We've been reading a few articles. Clearly, the idea of the future of finance is linked to so much. First of all, it's consumer trust and confidence. The customers and our customers' customers will be talking business to business, business to consumer, and everything in between. And also, there's a big debate, as we probably have all been reading, about whether capitalism, some people call it greed, is going to rule, and what the future of the economy will be driven by. Will it be driven by profits? Will it be driven by the same qualities and values that it's been driven by in the past, post-COVID? Same thing, Sean, love to ask you what your thinking is about how the economy must yield to human values.
Yeah, I mean, we even in a previous webcast covered just the humanization of the financial industry. I know some of the major investment houses were putting a lot of caveats in terms of where they invested their money. BlackRock came out with a $750 billion fund that had a lot of strings around the environment and diversity and inclusion. So it gave me a sense that, wow, like maybe there's a turning of a page here. And certainly with this pandemic, it's caused, I think, a lot of people, including the head of the UK bank, Mark Carney, former Canadian, talking about whether or not the values have changed or not in terms of finance.
And one of the things that's really important, I think, also is to understand that we might, in each of our own societies, and it's wonderful that we have a global panel today, in each of our own societies, we might have thoughts about what is and is not tone deaf, but clearly there are a lot of constituents that will perhaps push back. And there's, of course, a debate that we have been listening to carefully and observing carefully about whether these splits and schisms between different groups will ultimately push back against government, whether government will impose regulation, whether regulation will be changed because small business feels that they're not getting the fair share with regards to the overall pie. Large companies, will they be able to have the most power in these conversations? And as we have global partners, and as Thomas knows, we call it bedfellows, as we start to develop these bedfellow relationships of trust, is it okay to feel that our values of perhaps, you know, one set of whoever survives, is it the rising tide will raise all the boats, or will some boats sink as others rise? And so we'll talk about that as well in terms of these the future of finance. And I think the final conversation around an article is around something where Ray Dalio was interviewed by TED Connects, and some really interesting and provocative themes. So Sean, once again, do you want to address some of these?
Yeah, I find him fascinating as a person. But I think, you know, he brought some interesting questions up, quite pessimistic, actually. I think like if you're looking for a ray of sunshine, he was quite pessimistic about how the pandemic will affect both this industry and others. But I found his sense of candor very refreshing, as I'm sure we'll have today as well.
Right. And we really love the unprompted kinds of conversations that people have been having since we have more time on our hands. And this isn't an interview that where he gets to speak his mind quite freely. And we really recommend listening to it. I think there are two statistical approaches, because we have people in the future proofing community who are very interested in facts. And it's really hard to find facts these days. What is fintech? Let's set the stage. What is finance? What are payments? If we say follow the money, what does that even mean? What is the currency? Is the currency the same for everyone? What will things like international law and regulations and tax law have to do with any of this? When we talk about fintech and different ways that people have peer-to-peer kind of off the record transactions, which are rising, of course, quite a bit, what will that mean with regards to the standard definitions of banking? And all of the conversations around this today, we'll hear about this from multiple perspectives. But let's start with some numbers. So Sean, same thing. What are your thoughts about some of the numbers in terms of fintech serving large addressable market with very high growth rates?
I didn't want to get lost in the numbers, but certainly the more we prepped and read in advance of this webinar, the more inescapable the conclusion is. You know, if you're going to talk the future of finance, it's inescapable that you're talking about technology at the same time. You know, you've got incumbents, you've got upstarts, you've got, you know, certainly a whole bunch of different unicorns on this list of people that are creating ripples. I think for some of the people on our webinar today, it's like, how do we react to this? Do we work with them? Do we buy them? Do we bring together a forum of people for them to work together or expose things that they could to sell to others? But it's inescapable. I can't think of another industry where tech has turned an about face over the last 5 years than this one. And pivoting to this one, we always like to have a hero infographic. I think it offends maybe Andrea's sense of Spartanness, but we did look at the 24 different kind of topics and the 200 sub aspects to each one of those things that we may get into today. I don't think we'll cover all 200 as a panel today, but I'm sure we'll tick off a few of these.
One of the things we like about this is that it becomes a conversation piece for weeks to come, and we're hoping that everyone gets a chance to look deeply at some of these. They're not predictions, but they're a guide to the kinds of things that are going to be within the definitions of each of these subcategories: payments, currencies, insurance, global and national good, inclusion, black swans, and resilience, and we can go on and on. The concept here is that Sean and I in the future proofing community believes that it's going to be crossing, the jumping from one to another, picking a topic that today might be in the society quadrant that actually has to be married to a technology quadrant in order for it to come to market. And so we love to look at these long views of what's happening, and not to predict what's happening, but to equip everyone with a mindset around what it is that we can think about as we create the future that we really feel we believe in. And with that, what I'd like to do now is introduce our first panelist. Jessica Ross is currently SVP Finance, Office of Transformation with Salesforce. And Jessica is also going to talk about transformation and maybe her a perspective on what finance really is. So Jessica, welcome.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Really excited to be here.
And one of the things we'd like to know is, in your own words, you've had quite an amazing journey to get here. So tell us a little bit about your current role and your journey to get to this place.
No, absolutely. So I think a lot of people are like, you know, how did you land this gig, right? I think the title sounds very sexy. But the reality is my career has been based on being uncomfortable every single day of my career. So I am a very traditional finance person. I grew up in public accounting, started my career at Arthur Andersen. And many of you on the phone probably know, you know, that firm is no longer here. And so within 5 years, 4 years of my very early career, I suddenly found myself in a very uncomfortable situation and having to navigate myself through change. I ended up spending 12 years in public accounting between Andersen and Deloitte. And so from a consulting perspective, you're constantly being thrown into new uncomfortable situations. And as you move up in the firm, helping lead others through those uncomfortable situations. For me, I think personally also had disruption. So 2010 was a perfect storm of events. I had gotten divorced a few years prior, single mother, working 100-hour weeks trying to make partner, was suddenly diagnosed with diabetes, and then my daughter started having needs at home that required me to say, what are my values and what do I need to do differently? And so, again, navigating self through change went from having to walk away from an identity, right, and shift into something new and ambiguous. And so I actually left. I did to go to Kaiser Permanente, where I ended up spending 5 years, went into a traditional line finance role within controllership, and then got this amazing opportunity to lead cost transformation in the midst of healthcare reform. So disruption of an industry, leaning into really icky, uncomfortable stuff every day. That transformation was really about driving $7 billion out of the organization to make healthcare more affordable for our patients and communities, but super uncomfortable, and learning to navigate not just leading my direct team, right, but stakeholders across the org. After about 3 years of doing that, I call these change leadership roles, it's like a tour of duty, and it's highly emotional. You can only do that for a couple of years. I said, you know what, I want to go back to something more grounded in finance, and I went and I was the controller at Gymboree, and wanted something that was smaller, that was about a $1 billion organization, where I could feel the impacts of change and getting back to more of my traditional kind of finance role. I went over there to help take them public again, ended up taking them through their first bankruptcy, which they actually emerged out of. But again, like uncomfortable leading teams through change. About a week before we filed for that bankruptcy, I got a call from a person I really admired who had also been a former client of mine when I was at Deloitte, who said, I just took CFO gig at Stitch Fix. Do you want to help me come take them public? And so went literally, fun fact, went from taking Gymboree through its bankruptcy to crossing the street, taking Stitch Fix through its IPO. Loved that role. Same kind of disruption, being uncomfortable, learning, growing. And from there, recently got this opportunity for this, what I call my dream job. And it is the opportunity to lead Salesforce Finance globally through transformation to support a company twice our size. And I just think Salesforce is the perfect organization to do this. The intent is there. the tone from the top is there. And I think the technology platform and resources and the people, it's something I'm very, very excited about.
Well, I was fortunate enough to meet you during your Stitch Fix leadership role and was really impressed with how you saw ahead. So it was as if you have an operational responsibility, and I would call it 1 foot very clearly in the present with an operational responsibility and purview. But you also have this ability to see things in ways that others didn't. And I would call it a bravery around seeing that change is happening and knowing that status quo wasn't good enough. I wonder if you would talk from your perspective, I mean, you know, what that's been like and how you've used that skill, maybe even in your current job with what transformation is, you know, day to day. Is it operational? Is it theoretical? Is it frameworks or all of the above?
All of the above. And you know, that skill too, it's interesting because even as I'm giving career advice to people, I have, like, since the very beginning, I've always grounded myself in something that is going to be safe, right? Yet creating multiple opportunities and options on the outside, because you just never know what's going to happen. I think that early experience with Arthur Anderson really, really taught me that. And so, you know, when I think about transformation, it is about setting a very crystal clear vision of where we need to go. Where does finance, where do we as a finance organization, whatever organization you're leading, need to be? And then really getting your arms around all of the obstacles, the hairiest, most uncomfortable things that are going to prevent you from getting there. And creating a strategy, a very intentional strategy that's going to allow you to get there in a very balanced way. And so I think it's a constant balance between exactly what you said, dealing with what everybody is concerned about, which is what's most immediately in front of them, with this innate knowledge that I have and others have as well about where we need to be in the future. I think it's, you know, it's balancing accountability with motivation and inspiration. And it's also balancing a plan with being able to be agile and operate in ambiguity. And those are three tensions. And so at the end of the day, it is change management. My job is change management every single day. Yesterday, I was very exhausted. I had to like sign off at 6 and go grab a glass of wine, because it is really, it's navigating humans through change. And so I think one of the best compliments that I got, I've been at Salesforce for about a year now, was one of my peers, I was meeting with him one-on-one. He said, you know, Jessica, I finally figured out what you've been doing with these weekly meetings. Because for the first year, I had these weekly meetings with my boss, our executive leadership team. And it was various topics. And a lot of times they're like, do I really have to give this hour? Like, what is happening? And he said, I finally figured out what you've been doing. He's like, you've been pulling a Jedi mind trick on us. He's like, it's change management. And I said, yeah, I'm going to take that as a compliment. He said, you should. And so he's like, you're our Jedi master trainer. And this is what all of our jobs are, right, to do. Because if you tell somebody you're going to change them, they're going to resist. But if you lead them through it in a way that suddenly they wake up, they're like, oh, wait, that's what she did. That's what he did. That's going to be a transformation that's going to be sustainable.
Question about that, and I love the Jedi, because we continue the Star Wars images between us. I have a question about what your North Star is, because in, you know, Sean and I, in the work that we do in future proofing, we always talk about, you know, you can optimize for anything. You know, you have all these great ideas, but at some point you have to optimize for something. Yeah. And it strikes me that in a company as complex as you're working in and as large, and what, how many employees are there, like 1,000 people. So I would imagine there are a lot of constellations floating around trying to become your North Star. When you think about finance and the future of finance and what you're doing in transformation, what is one of, you know, you talk about being a learner doer and being prepared for the fourth industrial revolution. You've got, what is it, a $35 billion business that you're working to support?
Working to support.
So how do you decide what your North Star is? There's so many options for how to transform and where to go.
And I think, you know, a North Star has got to be a feeling, right? It's got to start with a feeling. And when I first got here, I'd say the finance vision was like, I counted the words. It was 50 words long. And, you know, my teams were like, okay, because it is, you want to do everything, right? There's so much that you can tackle. And so the vision that we've come up with, I'm actually super proud of. It's to be the world's most admired finance organization, driving stakeholder success and enabling durable growth. And any decision you make, you can actually hold up against that framework. And it has really, and being able to kind of bring that into every conversation. Are we doing those three things, right? There's the conversations that are messy on the inside, but when I hold up to be the world's most admired finance organization, if this decision isn't going to get me there, if, you know, I'm not focused on my stakeholders, and at the end of the day, this is not going to enable durable growth for Salesforce, then we shouldn't be focusing our time on it. As I think about where finance is going, right, it should be an enabler of the business. I think traditional operational finance has been very, you know, viewed historically as, you know, back office and you're in the back seat. And I mean, this should be side by side. And I don't ever want to be the finance team that like Mark Benioff calls and he's like, we want to do another acquisition. I'm like, can't support it. Like, that's not who we want to be. And so I think we've just got to be super intentional about everything we do, preparing us to be that co-pilot and enabler of the business.
I know that we could probably have the whole conversation with just us chatting about these really important topics, and certainly they hit on a lot of the universals. To think very specifically about the future-proofing community, and we tend to have people in our community who are practical. They like to do two things. One is an example of someone that they might know or not know that you admire for whatever reason, because you're a transformation leader. And so we would love to hear that. And then finally, we'd love to hear some kind of news they can use, you know, in terms of at the end of the day, Monday morning, we all read the books. We all listen to these webcasts. We all talk to experts. We have models. We have frameworks. We have education. We have experience. But something that you might like to share, you know, like if people think of anything in terms of transforming finance and the future of finance. So let's start with an example of someone that you admire, whether we know them or don't know them, a company. And then we'll end with your final question.
I'll be very quick. I'd say it was hard. You gave me that question. I just think that in this moment when there's a lot of challenges, there's a lot of goodness out there. So when I think about the type of companies that I admire right now, I think of three. I think there's the ones that their business models have demonstrated the innate ability to future-proof. So I think about Peloton, right? Going into this, I was a huge SoulCycle/Peloton person. Peloton has shown up for me in a way that I couldn't have predicted before. And I think they are doing good for the world, doing good for the community, but their business model is gonna thrive on the other side of this. I think Stitch Fix, my former employer, is also in that space. Katrina's foresight to kind of where retail was going has put them in a really great position right now. I also think about people that are have shown their ability to shift in a very agile way in this moment, right? So, and that's big companies and that's small companies. There's companies like Ford and GM that have repurposed their supply chains and manufacturing lines to be able to support putting PPE out there, right? And supporting our people on the front lines. But it's one of my favorite businesses, and Andrea, I know you know McMullen here in Oakland, right? Small business boutique retailer with a national brand. Within 2 weeks of this situation, I had a goodie box on my doorstep that was, you know, very much like taking Stitch Fix's model, but applying it in a very personal way. And she has completely digitally transformed her business in a matter of a couple of weeks. And then I'd say it's companies that it's very, you know, cliche, what you learn in business school, if you put the people first, right, you're gonna thrive. And I think companies that are making a stand for their employees right now, I'm very into the Ask Gary video series that the Southwest CEO is putting on, and the stance that we are not going to furlough employees and we're gonna do everything we can to support the people. I think those are the companies I admire right now. And then in terms of just a piece of advice, I said it. This is about, you have this moment. We've got it takes about 2 months to shift a behavior and make it a habit. And this is a moment that, what are we doing with this moment? And I think as companies, big or small, go into your closet and dig out all the skeletons and, pick the most uncomfortable one that you think is preventing your business from getting to the next level and work with your teams to say, how are we gonna tackle this? And I think that's, you know, the practical advice I live by every day. It's the measure I hold myself up against, and I'd recommend it for all of you.
Well, thank you so much. Inspirational and great way to start the panel. And good luck.
Thank you. Keep fighting the fight.
Okay, talk to you soon. So next, I'd like to welcome Thomas Krogh Jensen, coming from, are you in Copenhagen today, Thomas?
I'm in Copenhagen, yeah.
Home. Yeah, so what's it, yeah, what's it like? Are you sheltering in place there?
Yeah, so this is my fifth or sixth weeks in the lockdown. So this has been my office for the last 5 or 6 weeks. I actually have my son next door playing, so he might walk by here once in a while. So yeah, it's a totally new experience for many of us here, having our kids so close to all to us 24/7.
Well, you've also had a long career before you are joined your current role. But right now, I know you as CEO of Copenhagen FinTech, and we have a funny story to share of how we met. I think you should tell it.
I think we actually met through LinkedIn, right?
Didn't we?
No, I just remember
getting a phone call when Casper Klinga had a problem, and suddenly it was. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, not entirely. So you better tell it.
I just remember there was a last minute there was an election, and at the last minute, one of your keynote speakers couldn't make it. And so I think it was about two weeks before the event. This is a trick question. Could you come and do a keynote speech for this really big conference in 2 weeks? And it was actually a wonderful opportunity because it was the perfect storm in terms of a community that you've built that's really remarkable. So tell us about Copenhagen FinTech and what it is that you do as a hub and also as a connector within the global ecosystem.
Yeah. So just a little bit about myself. So I actually come from the established industry. So I've been working with some of the biggest Nordic banks and actually an American company, Aon, for 25 plus years. I think at the end of the day, I'll worked in senior management positions. And at some point you're looking at yourself in the mirror and you think, okay, I did my fair share of strategy memos and slide decks and been in meetings from morning till afternoon. And at some point there was this initiative called Copenhagen FinTech. So a number of the financial institutions and the bankers association sat down and said, okay, we want to position Denmark and the Nordics in this emerging trend called FinTech. And we want to create an organization that's a public-private partnership and a non-for-profit that kind of drive that agenda. So I was hired in as the first CEO, and I had quite a number of my colleagues, popping into my office and say, "What, are you crazy? What are you doing?" And this is basically an association. You've got two employees, and you don't even know what to do. And we have our space, and now we, 3.5 years down the line, we kind of grew an international global brand with a really huge outreach to Danish, Nordic, and global financial institutions. We worked with, on a continuous basis, we have 50 companies sitting with us. We worked with around 150 companies that were sitting in our lab over the past 3.5 years. We've engaged with probably on the other side of 1,000 different companies in many different programs. We do everything from incubation to acceleration, run different networks and international communities. You're in our global advisory board where we have everyone from Union Bank in the Philippines, the MAS monetary authorities in Singapore, we've got RBC in Canada, and so on and so forth. So we really quite quickly grew this organization to be an international hub and a connector between a community connector, you might actually call it.
One of the things that we observed last year in the advisory board meeting is the substantive nature of the conversations. It's not a symbolic board. It's a group of people who roll our sleeves up, no matter what our titles are. We roll our sleeves up. We try to look very. You lead us through an approach to really driving value that's unique to the region. And it's challenging when you think, the hub of finance is, and you can name any location. And then you challenge us, which I think is really important, You challenge the community to think of novel, really truly innovative ways to be meaningful. And you also, I think it's really interesting that there's a different zeitgeist in terms of the culture and the values in the Nordic region, in terms of the need to serve not just capitalistic needs, but also societal needs. So talk a little bit about what the changes are that you see in the demands of this role, especially post-COVID. I know you've just been in conversations with the government, and you've been extremely active in terms of trying to keep fanning the flames for the small and medium-sized businesses. Talk a little bit about what you've been doing the last couple of weeks, because it's really impressive.
So I think what is really interesting also, if we talk about some of the future trends, I think what we see in the region is that suddenly people are very aware that communities actually matter. We have all these kind of local community shops and small businesses and that are really, really, really struggling. And all of a sudden, it's all about how can the community pull together and actually help these businesses, because there's real people that is, you know, actually struggling and what can you do? You see large corporations. I was just reading today about some of, you know, Lego or a big retail chain, or some of these large corporations, you know, they go out in the press and say, we want to pay our bills. Instead of 90 days, we want to pay them right away. So please send them now so we can help you survive, right? And I think that's one important thing. I think there's going to be a really interesting moment. So where, you know, after whatever comes after the pandemic, those that would do really well are those that have their values in order and behave accordingly. Because we also see the opposite, right? That someone is just riding out and pressuring their small sub-suppliers and say, you know, you won't get your money now, you'll get it in 100 days, or we won't pay the rent for whatever. So I think, you know, communities matter. And the whole thing around the crowd economy, that is really taking off. It was starting, but it was really moving slowly. But we can see now, we supported a national crowdfunding platform, the idea of doing that. And we can see that just got written in one of the government relief packages now. So that's the work on that will hopefully start soon. So the crowd can come together and save some of these businesses and provide some of the liquidity that some of the relief packages won't. We're seeing, as I said, like big corporations actually behaving very ethically, and so I think that's very interesting. I think another trend that we're seeing is a lot of talk about, you know, so what will happen to the whole sustainability? You know that, Andrea. That's a big, you know, that's a big topic here in the Nordics. And there's a lot of conversation now around, so will that actually hold, you know, also post-corona? And up until now, it actually looks like it might even accelerate it. So it's very hard to get any airtime in the Nordics now unless you're able to frame what you're doing in the global SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, unless you talk about the impact you actually have. And I think that's going forward. That's also something we will see in many other regions. We were in Singapore in November, and that conversation was just about to take off there. And it's been going for a long time in the Nordic region. So I think that's also coming back to some of the, you know, the differences. There's a huge focus on sustainability and impact and ethics in general.
So I have one last question. You have, humble though you are, you have probably the most sophisticated vantage point around what is the future of finance, because you are, I would call it like a player of the game Go, you know, being able to look at the strategy, because you have a lot of local engagement with startups. You have a lot of relationships with global large banks and large institutions and large companies. You understand the society, and you also understand these government forces. I know there's COVID that we're talking about now, but even aside from that, could you tell us from your perspective on the future of finance? You know, because for a long time you didn't have blockchain because there wasn't such a thing as blockchain. Then blockchain came and it enabled ABC, okay? Then there was a promise of, as you were saying, crowdsourcing or crowdfunding. before the platforms were there to enable it, you really couldn't do it, even if there was pent up demand to do those kinds of things. What are some things that you, you know, maybe two things to share about things you observe about the redefinition or the new opportunities in finance in general? We always joke, you know, Sean and I say, follow the money. You know, what's going on with the money? Who's got it? Who's going to, you know, we always joke about who's going to probably dominate currency. It might not be a government at all. It might be a large platform. It might be a Chinese platform. It might be, who knows, a consortium. What do you see? Maybe two zooming out. What is the future of finance?
So, yeah, well, it's an interesting question, and I wish I had a really clear answer on that, especially now. I think one thing we're seeing, and that's coming, of course, obviously from a Nordic point of view, but I think the whole thing around industry convergence, if we look in the Nordic region, and I think most of Europe, you know, finance was something that was happening in the industry, in the financial sector, in the financial industry. And I think one of the things, the trends that we are seeing now, especially within fintech, is that this is something that is happening within every industry. This is fueling so much different innovation, so many different business models, and everyone is trying to get their share. I think you have the perfect examples of what Amazon is doing in the US, right? And they're just coming to Denmark. They flew past Denmark before, but now they actually landed at 200 franchises here. So, but Amazon is one example. You'll see Alibaba in China. You have plenty of examples of big techs. But you'll see more traditional industry players that all of a sudden come to us and say, that fintech, how can we enable that business model, whether it's like we're producing palms or we're doing 3D printing or whatever it is. So I think that's one big thing. We see everyone has a fintech play, and fintech is moving from something being a vertical in the finance sector to something being much more horizontal, and it is driving a lot of innovation and different business models. And then I think one thing, interesting things is also the whole, of course, and that's not only for fintech, but the whole data, the radical openness of data and giving that free, and what you can use that data for. I saw on your chart there, you talked about the open APIs. We're talking about open banking now. That's only the first step towards probably open finance, and all the data and who owns actually that data. That is me as a consumer. But right now, everyone else is profiting on that data except for me as a consumer or me as a business, right? And I think we're beginning to see, and we only see in the beginning, but we're beginning to see other fintech companies starting to give the power back to the consumer or to the business.
Well, I hope you'll stay around because we have some Q&A at the end. People have been submitting some questions, and super interesting to hear from your part of the world and your perspective. So now I'd like to have Sean come in and talk to Amy Dawson about her perspective from Visa.
Yeah, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce Amy Dawson. She's head of North American Innovation for Visa. And I'm always intrigued by people that are from the Bay Area that have a Bay Area background. And I always try to figure out, is that the Zoom background or the real background? So tell us, Amy, what are we looking at behind you here?
Oh, it is definitely a Zoom background. I have 10-year-old twins here in the house. And so I needed something to protect the wreckage behind me.
Hey, no need to even caveat it. So, belying the title of what you do, head of North American Innovation for Visa, I can think of hardly any other company that could participate in so many of the different flanges of finance that we probably talked about. Maybe as a good starting point is, like, what does that role entail? What do you do at Visa?
Yeah, great question. And I get it often. So Visa, for those that may not be familiar with it, is a network. And so we issue credentials through banks that can be accepted at merchants. And so we've been, as we like to refer to ourselves, as the original fintech, that we digitized cash a long time ago. And so what we do as an innovation team is applied innovation. And so we are the leader within the market space. And ecosystem partners come to us to understand what the future is. And so with that, one of our key objectives is innovation evangelism. So we're really talking with our partners around what is the future, where are things going globally, locally, for banks, for merchants. The other thing that we do is we're a B2B company, but we need to address the C at the end of the B. So we're really a B2B to C company. And so with that, we spend a lot of time in our applied innovation of utilizing human-centered design methodology. So we really dive deep in terms of ethnographic research, of understanding what are the needs for consumers, for businesses, for the people within those businesses around enabling money movement, making sure that it's secure, safe, meeting the desirability of consumers, both of what they know they want, as well as what they don't know, you know, or can't articulate what they want. And so with that, we actually have a team of product managers, designers, developers, strategists, payment experts that really work with our ecosystem partners to help them with business opportunities or challenges for the future. And then the third thing we do is net new product development. So given the work that we do around innovation evangelism, around the co-creation that we do with our ecosystem partners, we get to see, hear, and learn a lot about what is happening within the industry. And we identify themes and we'll incubate those into proof of concepts and pilots that ultimately, if they pass a number of tests, will graduate and be commercialized products.
So you, I mean, given what you've just told me as well, I checked some of your background too. I mean, you used to work at a bank, you used to work at a trading ground, you used to work at a tech company. You are like the Renaissance woman for the future of finance here, I think. Plus you've now got this whole ecosystem of partners that you deal with. Take us a glimpse, give us a glimpse into the next decade of the future of finance. Any big headlines that kind of, I know it's tough, we're in this pandemic stage of being able to see past the next few months or year, but what's kind of the longer term trends within finance?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about three trends from the last decade, if you will, to start with, and then how they're transforming. And I think they actually build nicely without being planned with Jessica and Thomas's points. So the last decade was all around digital transformation. It was also around consumer empowerment. So consumer empowerment, meaning like, give me personalization, make it speedy for me, make it flexible. And then also mobility. So the ability of like getting everything onto your device and having it be able to go with you. So a number of things have happened based on any, you know, type of trend you look at, be it, you know, societal, technology, political. And we really see digital transformation moving to digital synergy. So like, you know, if you haven't gotten to digital transformation, you're getting there really quickly, right? With this pandemic is like accelerating for those that were laggers. Digital synergy is really around the outcome of things that are digitized, enabled by AI, should be much greater than the sum of the parts. And so the ability to take things and have greater outcomes for the consumers and for businesses that are not only, you know, active participant from the users, but passive and decision-based for them to have a better outcome. So digital transformation to digital synergy is one key change that we see in the next decade. The second one, and Thomas, without being planned, I am right aligned with you. I talked about consumer empowerment being the past decade. We really see the next decade being around individual empowerment, that individuals don't identify themselves as just consumers of companies, but they understand the value of themselves and the value that they can contribute and be recognized for. And then the last one, which I'm somewhat hesitant to say because it doesn't feel like it right now, but I think we go from mobility to a sense of being unbound. So you can see when I say unbound, you know, all of us are in shelter in place right now or quarantine, so it doesn't feel very unbound. It feels very bounded, quite honestly. But you know, the idea of, you know, with cloud technology, with AIs, with credentials, like you should have the ability to not be, you know, tied to form factors and be able to go and interact in different ways. And so again, AI, biometrics being key enablers of those. So just in summary, you know, next decade, going from digital transformation to digital synergy, going from consumer empowerment to individual empowerment, and going from mobility to unbound. And as a company, you should be looking at where those three areas are and what you're doing to achieve those type of outcomes for your consumers, as well as your business partners.
Now, I asked you to go long and take the 5 to 10 year look. Now I'm going to ask you to go like a little bit further in. We're all shacked up in our places with our 10-year-olds, kind of trying to survive through all of this. Are you seeing things within your visa world that it's just accelerating what was happening already, or are there new dynamics that are happening within this coronavirus that you go, wow, that's really something I didn't expect that's now come to the forefront?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we use methodologies of human-centered design. So we very quickly set out to do some ethnographic research, interviews with consumers. We focused on the markets that were being impacted first, so San Francisco, New York, and Massachusetts. And from those studies, what we found was five key themes. So the first two, we like to say they're the Snoop Dogg one. So, you know, two key things came out of one being, I've got, you know, my money on my mind and my mind on my money. And so the first one being my money's on my mind, that it became very clear that people became concerned about cash and what, you know, type of germs and viruses they could get with cash. And so really we have had a long effort in payments around getting more contactless acceptance. And so we've seen a lot of acceleration of that adoption. And then, you know, my mind on my money is people are worried about their financial situations. And so there's a lot that our, you know, ecosystem can do to help individuals as well as businesses around the aspect of being worried about finances. So the first two things that we identified was the acceleration of money on my mind and mind on my money. The third thing was around that there are really no good solutions right now, only trade-offs. And so we started seeing things like, you know, I can go to the store, but I'm risking getting exposure to the coronavirus. I'm worried about what I touch. So then I can go to delivery. Well, delivery can be expensive for folks, and then you start going into the unbanked, and there isn't the potential for them to actually engage in that digital economy. And so I think in the future, as well as we're starting to see now, some companies trying to address that issue of, you know, between shopping in the physical location versus getting delivery, how can, you know, many different segments be able to participate in all those things securely and safely. The fourth thing we started to see, just as Thomas was saying, and again, I swear we didn't talk beforehand, was a trend around we're all in this together, that, you know, as he said, you know, the awareness that communities matter is clearly what we saw in our research, and we see it all over the news as well. The local focus on supporting small businesses, the, you know, aspect of working as a community together and helping to support each other. As you pointed out, I live in San Francisco, and so, you know, you see on, you know, social networks like Nextdoor, where folks are like, you know, I'm an able person. If you can't get out of your house or you're at risk, I'm happy to help you. And so it's really incredible to see that and how folks are really trying to help each other and help businesses. And this hyper awareness of really understanding business models and how it works, right? Like if I don't pay for that local restaurant, it is gonna go away. The last thing we saw was this idea that, you know, it's the human spirit that, it, you know, we call it making lemonade. So, you know, folks are saying, okay, it is what it is. How do I make the best of it? You know, how do I, you know, take the time that I potentially have to focus on family? How do I take the time I potentially have to pursue something new or get creative or do those projects around the house? So it was really, you know, a human insight that once I say it makes sense of, you know, people, you know, thinking about, you know, what they're using for payment and, you know, what exposure they get. Is it plastic or cash or, you know, a digital device to use contactlessly? Is it, you know, they're worried about their finances? Is it that there are only trade-offs and what to do? Is it that we're all in this together? And then the last one being, you know, the more uplifting, making lemonade of the situation. And so I think those are in line with those trends that I mentioned earlier in terms of where things are going in the next decade. But I think like winners in the near term that are hyper-focused on those five immediate insights will build a great amount of consumer loyalty at this time.
I was going to say, before I allow Mario to play Anchorman here and summate or conflict with everybody what everybody said, you know, I've asked you to go long, I ask you to go short. Maybe let's take a 2-year window here. What's your best 15-second, 20-second piece of advice for businesses trying to deal with this flood of both long and short-term change. Is there any kind of broad strokes that you should be you would be telling them if they came to your New York Innovation or San Francisco Innovation House?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is consumers are hyper aware of the value and the ethics that you as a company are doing. And so ground there. The second is really understand the human needs. I'll go back to your point around the Zoom, you know, the idea of, you know, creating a background may seem like just something fun, but it really helps support individuals' needs of feeling comfortable presenting themselves and not being conscious about what's behind them in their individual shelter. So in the next 2 years, those that focus on values, focus on the desirability, really understanding those consumer needs, and then working from there to identify the, you know, the typical words of, you know, feasibility, how, what's the technical solution for it, and then lastly, the viability, the business model for it.
Well packaged. Wow. We got a lot of square per square minute insights in the little segment that we have there. I'm going to ask you to pause there. I'm going to bring Mario in, who's probably got a different perspective, just as he's coming from a different part of the world and does probably different things than you as well. So thank you, Amy. Mario Hernandez, he's the CEO of Open Finance Summit, which just happened, I think. Just happened, right? And he's also CEO of a company called EOS, which is a fintech services provider. So you're not only somebody that brings people together, you're actually somebody that does the work of bringing finance to light. So you kind of wear both hats here, Mario. Welcome, first of all.
You're very welcome, Tim.
And you're Madrid, you're a native of Madrid, but you're coming to us from Mexico today. You've got this different geographic mindset. You've got this different mindset in terms of bringing, I think you had 20 different countries come to your Open Finance Summit. What's your gestalt? What's the overall kind of perspective that you have around finance from where you sit?
Well, basically, let me talk about what brought me here. Like 10 years ago, I was we were very happy with our I was very happy with my software company. We did financial services software for, you know, players basically in Europe. And it was kind of very mature market 10 years ago. We had very extremely proven payment switches and platforms and digital platforms. At that time, we made a first BBVA wallet, and it was year 2007, just right after iPhone was settled. And well, like in year 2010, we had the opportunity, I had the opportunity myself to come to Mexico City, and well, do a mobile banking platform for Santander. And from there on, I wasn't planning to live in Mexico. In fact, it wasn't my destiny, you know. I just wanted to do that job, and that's all, you know. But, you know, there's something that comes today that it's about the underserved and the markets, the underserved people market. Here we have in Mexico, we have over 120 people, but in the region, together with Brazil, we have 600 million population. Most of that, half of that is underserved, half of that needs financial inclusion solutions. So basically from here, what we saw is we needed to do something, you know? So then it came COVID, and you know, I will tell you later if you want. Now we are doing some, like kind of converge, you know, that problem of financial inclusion together with the digital needs in this new era. No?
And this might be one of the bigger untapped opportunities from your region of the world, but you know, you kind of operate across a range of different solutions, digital wallets and blockchain and a whole bunch of different things. So you've probably got a unique perspective in your region. What's the biggest untapped opportunity over the next, call it, 5 years?
Well, I would say some of my colleagues, Amy, Thomas, Andrea, and yourself have already mentioned some, but I would say, well, alternative lending, it's for sure something to be solved. We are running a program, let's say a public-private program for SME loans. And well, alternative lending, basically, it's you know, a must, you know. Well, we have an opportunity on machine learning. Amy was talking about artificial intelligence. We still think data, for sure, these days, data is not definitely the new oil, no? So what we see is marketplaces also together with these insights that, you know, the demand part and the offer part needs, you know, with this machine learning together on a ecosystem that would join all industry and maybe on a global scale, you know, because what we think is this COVID thing maybe has flattened the world, and we are more Pangea than continent, five continents, you know. So that's what we saw. Andrea was saying very wise words on how now we are all connected more than ever. And it's something that we really think we can get insights from everywhere. And that's the reason I say we can flatten the world. And, you know, the regions in the world that we see are, let's say, more strong in, you know, like regulation today for the region. Colombia is starting with COVID a new regulation paradigm. You know, here we have open banking, Central Bank of Mexico. They opened the Pandora box with the open banking approach that we should seek. Well, Thomas knows a lot on this because in Europe they have this already started some years ago. But we are at the starting point with PCD2, but we still don't have any on that. We are seeing that those open banking standards, what Amy was saying about data, big data, we could get streams of information from the insights or to personalize, you know, the financial service that you may need. And so that's something that can be unique, because it's not that I have this product, it's that you have this need and I may have or not the service for you.
I got to, I love debates where I'm almost 50-50 on this one, so maybe you can settle it for me. Is the future of finance going to be driven by customers and citizens and what they demand, or is it going to be driven by technology and data and what it can do? Like, solve this dilemma in my head here, Mario.
My opinion my perspective is that technology is an enabler. And as my colleague said already, you know, personas, the people are going to be, customers are going to be in the center more than ever. Now they are more than ever. And we would segment those customers. It would be very important, you know, something that I guess is to be said this in this webinar. Fraud detection, risk managers, cybersecurity, those are issues to be tackled in any platform you may deploy. You know, we've seen in the first quarter several attacks to large platforms with millions of users. So we think those issues are really important these days. Huh?
It's interesting, Mario. The irony was pre-pandemic, if you had asked me what was the biggest black swan moment that would take down many industries, it would have been a virus that was cyber in nature. So it's kind of ironic that a health-related virus was the one that actually did kind of bring us to our knees, right? There's so much, man, we're going to have more time with you on a different webcast with Mario, because we got four great passionate panelists. And so we've almost run out of time here. I would love to do kind of a round the horn at the end of this, though. I know Jessica's left, but Thomas, maybe you can kind of wrap what you've heard up from the other people and kind of your own thoughts in terms of just a small little package in terms of a summary.
Yeah, so thanks. I think what already been mentioned, technology as an enabler and the whole way that data is being opened up, and I think as I mentioned, industry convergence and some of these stuff, this is gonna, you know, this is a sector that an industry that is gonna go through radical transformation, that have been through a transformation, but is going through even more, and might even accelerate it after this pandemic, right? So I think it's never been more interesting to be in the industry as it is right now, and super interesting in so many different ways. And if you think you figure it out, you know, forget it.
Yeah, I find the most certain people in like an episode like this are the ones that I don't listen to, because there has to be an element of doubt, right?
Yeah. And I think we talked a little bit about strategy in the beginning, and I think, you know, what is challenging for many of the industry, for many of the people being in the industry for many years, is like you used to draw a line between where we are now and where we wanted to go and do a solid plan of that, right? And this is just like all gone now. So this is much more about, we talked about agile, but also, you know, creating that kind of optionality in you know, it can go so many different ways. There's so many things can happen. And they can happen overnight. I think the pandemic is an excellent, you know, example of that, how fast things can change.
Yeah, well summated. Amy, do you have kind of a wrap-up thought from what you've heard today?
Yeah, I want to compliment my fellow panelists, because I really learned a lot and appreciate a lot of your perspective. So a couple of things I wrote down that really resonated with me is, Mario, you know, the people first, technology is an enabler. And we all talked about that a bit in terms of, like, you know, openness of data, APIs, open banking. Thomas, I really loved how you articulated, you know, the awareness that communities matter. It's communities that matter locally. It's communities that matter within your ecosystem of business partners. And then Jessica, I wrote down the quote that she said, that I think anybody who works in innovation or future proofing, you know, tell people to change and they will resist, but lead them and they will follow. And I think, you know, for myself, that's a huge part of my job. And I think, you know, anybody that does the type of work that we do, you know, values that type of approach to leading people.
Great. And Mario, once again, you're in the privileged position of being last in line. So you get to summate everything that we've talked about.
Well, it was very, very interesting insights from all of my colleagues from all over the world. Well, I would say from the Europe perspective of Christ, I really think there's a whole position of a mature market that we saw this morning with the program relief that you have there in the Nordics. Amy definitely on an innovation pace that Visa is making for the world as a networker, I would say, as you mentioned. It's with a customer-centric approach, I guess that's an excellent, that's a proposal, the value proposal. Jessica told us from a vendor, what would be the, where they are seeing these days and how they can support the whole ecosystem, not only the financial service ecosystem, but also others. And that's very interesting. And you guys, I think, well, Andrea and yourself, I think you brought this new set. I could say everything is difficult to be said in the time we have, but employment is something that is affecting the world. And if there is any, we talk about healthcare also, you Andrea was mentioning about healthcare, and also Emily said something on that. I would say if we bring employment, quality of employment together with healthcare, that would be, you know, like if we could put in place healthcare programs with unemployment paradigm, that would be great, you know, these days.
Yeah, it's interesting how as much as we try to talk about finance and try to boil this $25 trillion industry down into an hour, it's really society too, right? Like this finance is the wheel that drives a lot of what happens, healthcare, education, many of the other industries. So that's a really good point there at the end, Mario. I'm going to bring it back to Andrea because Andrea, if I know anybody, you're extraordinarily good at getting to the summary point. So any exclamation point you want to put on?
First, I'd like to thank all of the panelists. This was actually one where I learned more than I can even imagine. And we had done a fair amount of thinking about this in advance. And also I have a lot to reflect on. I think it's a moment that's profound. And so what everyone said, first of all, it does feel as if the world is brought together when we do these. It's really a lovely feeling, the things that we have in common, but also hopefully the new friends that we make here and also the people in the future-proofing community. And I think that the future is ours to invent. One of the things I realized is by listening to inspiring leaders like the four of you, you know, Amy and Thomas and Mario and Jessica, that it's all of us and the ideas that we have and the leadership that we bring to the table that's going to make the difference in what's happening next. So I'm very inspired by everyone. I think that it was really important conversations, and I hope that we all continue to make our world feel bigger and smaller at the same time. So thank you to the panelists, and Sean and I will do a bit of a closeout just to make sure that we put a ribbon around this conversation. So thank you very much to all the panelists. Sean, would you like to talk about the last couple of slides that we have?
Yeah, just a real quickies here. Similar to the content that we've shared today, we've got two follow-up webcasts happening in May, the future of work, which has totally been impacted by this pandemic. So I'll be interested to see what our panel has to say on May 12th. And then you could just have a research and development department, but there are 24 other ways to get into innovation. And we're going to explore many of those 25 within a session called The Roots to Innovation in May 26th. We have this thing, we like to perhaps arrogantly think it's possibly the smartest newsletter on the web. I think we've got one coming up this week on the future of work, and we will summate what we've talked about in this discussion in our early May newsletter. So connect with us. We're likable, friendly people. So hopefully you can subscribe to that. And then finally, our book should have been out by now. So this is a candid kind of revelation by us that we would have been out in February, but this pandemic thing happened and a couple of book tours kind of got canceled or went sideways. So come hell or high water, we're coming out on May 25th. So please, we've got a book called Future Proofing Next. We humbly would love to get your opinions and hopefully get your ambassadorship on it as well. So that'll be coming out in late May.
And so what we'd like to do to wrap up is once again, thank the panelists, thank the community for people who are listening to this. What we really hope is that we keep spreading the word. We are very hungry learners and we are also active doers, everyone in this community. So please continue to challenge us and share with us. And the final thing is that there were some questions that came across the transom. Two of them were covered. Some of them were not covered. We talked about data and AI, and there's one about Africa that we had to leave off the table because of time. So we will also sidebar with people, but we wanted to thank the community for being so spirited and so engaged in these important topics. And thanks again to the panel. You were awesome and lots to think about. So until the next time, we'll see you in the hopefully near future.